All right, welcome to Brighttown Broadcast News for Wednesday, August 23rd, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me today. And coming up today, we've got an interview with Ann Vandersteel from Right Now with Ann Vandersteel, which is the show on Brighttown TV featuring Ann Vandersteel, a well-produced show, hard-hitting headline news, Monday through Friday on Brighttown.tv. You can also check out her website at rightnow.news. So we'll have her in studio for a fascinating interview. Now, things are changing very rapidly out there. We're seeing a strong uptick in purchases of survival supplies, nutrition, and immune-boosting supplements right now. And I've been at this long enough to know, I have a very strong feeling about this, that the Labor Day weekend for retailers, you know, it's going to be a blowout of all kinds of gear, you know, survival gear, ammunition, firearms, knives, of which we have some coming out too, but also preparedness, food and supplements and lots of other things. I think we're also going to start seeing an uptick in purchases of gold and silver. I checked with my gold and silver sponsor today, the Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company, and they said that currently, right now, the premiums are still very, very low, but it won't last. History tells us that it will not last. They've got, They've got kangaroos and they've got Britannia's silver rounds for premiums in the $2 range. I mean, $2 to $3, under $3. And some of them are just slightly above two. So it's probably, man, how come my dog hyperventilates every time I start talking about gear? I think he's into prepping maybe as much as I am. Maybe I've taught him that. But if you want to get ahead of the curve here on any of these things, keep your eyes out for all kinds of, you know, deals and sales and special offers on the Labor Day weekend coming up. As you may know, I failed to do much shopping over the July 4th holiday, and I regretted that. I should have picked up some more ammo and things like that. So personally, I'm going to be doing some shopping over the Labor Day weekend. I just try to pick up some more survival supplies. But our sales at the Health Ranger store begin Thursday, August 31st. And then they go, I think it's a four-day deal through the Labor Day weekend. And we will be introducing our knives. I've had a lot of interest in the knives, including that one knife I mentioned called Escape from LA. And I've got some other knives coming out, Mass Ratio. I think that's going to be available. I'll keep you posted on that. If you want super high-end survival knives, that's coming right up. But before we get there, let's talk about what just happened at the BRICS summit. Because, of course, well, the BRICS leaders began meeting yesterday. And, of course, Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, was unable to attend because there is an arrest warrant out for him by essentially Western governments. Now, there's no arrest warrant for Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden or Hunter Biden or any of these other crooks that run the regime, but there's an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin, if you can believe that. So he had to join remotely. And when he joined remotely in his speech, he took a shot at what he called the illegitimate sanctions from the West that, quote, seriously weigh on the international economic situation. And he harped on the unlawful freezing of sovereign states' assets, which, of course, all the BRICS nations agree with that statement. The West has weaponized the dollar by stealing, just looting the assets of other nations that are held in Western banks and Western currencies. And this is what the U.S. did to Russia, stole $300 billion of Russian assets and cut Russia off from the SWIFT system. And this is exactly why the BRICS nations are announcing their own new international settlement currency that will bypass the dollar. But Putin goes on to say, quote, we are consistently increasing fuel, food, and fertilizer supplies to the states of the global south. And he blamed international food shortages on the West's unlawful sanctions, which is exactly correct. In fact, it's America and the West that have weaponized the dollar, weaponized currency. You run around the world as bullies, threatening and trying to coerce everybody into compliance with some lunatic agenda like transgenderism, for example. You know, the West, led by the United States' current regime, is actually the scourge of humanity. It is the most evil entity on planet Earth at the moment, and that's why nations are going to move away from the dollar. And that meeting, began yesterday. So watch for more announcements in the days ahead, and it won't be long, I believe, before we start to see a lot of these nations as they roll out the BRICS currency settlement system. And that's nation-to-nation settlement, by the way. It won't be individuals holding this new currency, using it on the street. It's nations settling with other nations. But as this increases, you're going to see more of these nations dropping the dollar, selling off U.S. debt, like China is doing right now, by the way, in spades, and causing more dollars to essentially come flooding back to the United States. Along with all the massive money printing in the U.S., you're going to see rapidly accelerating devaluation of the U.S. dollar, which will be reflected in, of course, the appearance of inflation in prices of goods and services. And so, I've said this many times, but whatever food that you can buy today is probably going to be the cheapest food that you will see for many years to come. Or whatever ammo that you buy right now is probably the most affordable ammo that you'll see for many years to come, and so on and so forth. Anything that you can pick up right now, if you've got the extra cash and you have the space to store it, is probably going to save you money in the long run, because inflation is getting worse for all the reasons we just mentioned. Now, by the way, just another example of the evil of the West right now is this article from SlayNews.com. United Nations is building a digital army to censor online, quote, disinformation. So the UN has revealed that its unelected organization is building a digital army to police and censor the speech of the taxpaying public online. And the UN says it is a global player in the, quote, fight against online misinformation. And now they're calling it not just misinformation, but deadly disinformation. They're saying that so-called disinformation, which is whatever they say it is deadly and poses an existential risk to the core building blocks of modern society. This crazy alarmist language includes terms like a war and the battlefield of language and information. And again, they say that it's deadly to allow people to say something that the UN disagrees with. So whether it's climate change or, I guess, the war in Ukraine with Russia, or whether it's transgenderism or inflation or anything, vaccines, plandemics, you name it. If they say it's misinformation, then they're going to say you're deadly. You're exposing people to death by saying whatever we say is not true. Of course, you and I know that the United Nations is, of course, a human trafficking operation. And when the UN blue helmets go into places like Africa, the first thing they do is they kidnap children and women and start trafficking them. And they get involved in the drug trade, the human trafficking trade, and then the weapons trade, and so on. The UN is a giant global mafia run by the West. And of course, they can't have that exposed. So they're just now desperate to label everything disinformation in order to cover up their own crimes, because the UN is a corrupt criminal organization. So is, the so-called government of the United States. So is NATO, just in a different way. But the UN is pure evil, and the WHO, of course, underneath the UN, has played a role in the mass murder of at least 20 million people with this COVID pandemic. I mean, it's just astonishing the level of evil that has organized under the United Nations, and then they have the gall to claim that, well, they have to stop disinformation. You want to stop disinformation? Go shut yourself down. Take yourself offline. The WHO has pushed disinformation from day one, and they continue to do so. And, just as a side note, there's a fantastic series that just came out on Netflix. Now, again, I don't subscribe to Netflix, but I have friends who do. And so they let me watch a couple of episodes of this series called Painkiller. And Painkiller documents the rise and fall of Purdue Pharma and OxyContin. And it stars, by the way, at least one of the main actors is Matthew Broderick from, War Games from the 1980s. Except now Matthew Broderick is obviously quite a bit older, And he plays the bad guy. He plays, I think, the head of the Sackler family. But he does a great job. I mean, he's a very accomplished actor. And so he plays the role, you know, perfectly. But this Netflix special, which is like a 5 or 6 part miniseries, it, you know, it allows the screenplay and the script writers and the actors and everything to point out how evil this one particular pharmaceutical company was, Purdue Pharma, and the Sackler family, who made billions of dollars fraudulently pushing these highly addictive drugs, OxyContin, at higher and higher doses and destroying people's lives, and, you know, rigging the FDA and hiring, you know, a bunch of high-profile lawyers and heavy hitters and influencers. Even Rudy Giuliani they hired at one point to help cover up all their crimes. and a bunch of other people. And the Netflix special goes out of its way to talk about how evil Purdue Pharma was. And, you know, how evil this one pharmaceutical giant had become, and all the manipulations and all the crimes and all the destroyed lives and all the suicides and drug overdose deaths and all of this. And at the end of the show, they say, oh, you know, 300,000 people are believed to have died from overdose deaths related to OxyContin. And I'm thinking, wow, you did this 6-part series with all these, you know, implied accusations and evil and sobbing and crying. And I'm not saying that that's not true. It is true. I think that company was evil. But 300,000 deaths, my point here is that that pales in comparison to the deaths from the COVID pandemic and the vaccines that came with it. We're talking at least 20 million deaths globally. And in the United States, probably over 1 million deaths from the vaccine alone, and at least 5 million people maimed or disabled by the vaccine itself. And yet, you would never see Netflix run a show that attacked, you know, the vaccine industry, right? I mean, just like a few years ago, they never would have attacked Purdue Pharma or the Sackler family because, you know, OxyContin was making big money and paying off all the right people. It's only later that they can come in and they can show how evil that was. But right now, you can't have a movie or a special attacking the vaccine industry because the vaccine industry pays off the New York Times and CNN, you know, brought to you by Pfizer. And they fund half the universities in America and they fund the med schools and they run the advertising and the medical journals and the science journals and they pay off the doctors and everything. Did you know in this movie, I'm sorry, the series by Netflix, what they depicted, which was rather shocking, was that the drug reps would go in order to sell more drugs to the doctors, the drug reps who were hired just out of college and they were young, kind of sexy looking women, that they would have sex with the doctors so that those doctors would prescribe more OxyContin. And that they would entice those doctors also with trips to, you know, company events, you know, Purdue Pharma events, which were giant rave parties. At least this is how it was depicted in the Netflix special. And at these giant parties, the doctors would, you know, hook up and have sex with the young drug reps. And they knew what they were doing. They were making all kinds of money and driving Porsches and so on by sleeping with these like creepy older doctors. And the doctors, in order to have access to the sex, had to keep prescribing more OxyContin. Otherwise, they wouldn't, you know, get laid by the young pharmaceutical reps, the sexy young women. So this is when I laughed, because I saw them like, wow, actual pharma whores. These women are whores who sleep with doctors so that they prescribe OxyContin so that they get all this big bonus money so they can buy their fashion purses and their Porsche cars and whatever else they wanted. And it was this whole racket while people died in the streets from addiction. And, oh, also these pharma whores, at least as depicted in the docuseries, they would crush up the OxyContin pills and snort them at these party events. So they were getting high off their own product while banging the doctors who were prescribing this highly addictive form of, I guess, morphine or some form of morphine. I don't know the exact molecules. And destroying people's lives for profit and for sex. I mean, this story had everything. Everything that's wrong with the pharmaceutical industry, you see. But they will never depict the truth about the vaccine industry, which has killed many times more people just in the last, what, how long has it been? 3 years or whatever, 2.5 years since the COVID vaccine came out. The number of lives destroyed, died suddenly, you know, myocarditis, heart attack, stroke. Young athletes, 23 years old, dying on the football field or the soccer field or the baseball field. Yeah, there's never going to be a docuseries from Netflix talking about those deaths because the pharmaceutical industry is still in control. So, in other words, we've learned nothing in society. And Big Pharma is still calling all the shots and killing people whenever it wants to. And Netflix couldn't give a crap. Nor big tech, nor, you know, Hollywood or the news media, the big corporate media. Nobody gives a crap because they're all getting paid. And some of them are getting laid, getting paid and laid. And that's what it's all about out there in the world of corrupt medicine and so-called science. I said this before. You know how Colombia was designated a narco state? You know, in the 1980s, I believe. Essentially, a sovereign state controlled by narcotics or the narcotics industry. Well, the U.S. is a pharma state, entirely occupied and controlled by pharmaceutical interests, and then exporting those interests all over the world to try to push more toxic pharmaceuticals and deaths and vaccines onto other nations around the world. This is one of the biggest exports of the West. And this is one of the reasons why the BRICS nations despise the West. Because what does the U.S. export? Death. You know, death medications and death products and consumer care products, you know, loaded with toxic chemicals and toxic fragrance and processed junk food. Export that all over the world, and then soon, a generation later, there's a diabetes and obesity everywhere and heart disease, and people are dying from cancer. Yeah, because the U.S. exports death and destruction all over the world. The U.S. exports GMOs and herbicides like glyphosate. The U.S. exports also transgenderism and grooming and cultural warfare on children. And countries like Japan are even trying to resist that. It's like, my God, what are you trying to do to our children? You know? But the U.S. just wants to keep exporting death and demonism all over the world. I mean, seriously, the BRICS nations have decided, you know, they're going to have a new currency. But the United States, its currency is death and evil and destruction and suffering. And that's what the U.S. inflicts all around the world. And I don't mean the real United States. You know, the real America that you and I know, that's that lives in our hearts and our souls. Sadly, that is not the America that's operating right now. We are operating under an occupied, evil version of America. Like you know, it's been taken over by horrific demonic forces, and they're using it for nothing but evil. But that's how the world sees America, the exporter of death, the bully, the destroyer of everything. You know, the U.S. runs around the world wielding economic sanctions as weapons of mass economic destruction against the people of innocent nations all over the world. You know, it's a weapon of mass destruction. We're like, we're going to destroy your economy if you don't do what we say. Oh, we're going to sanction you now. And because the dollar is the global reserve currency, or has been until now, those sanctions actually meant something. It could hurt. Well, you know, 100 plus nations around the world are tired of being punished and manipulated with the weaponization of the dollar. And so that's why they're joining up with BRICS and rejecting the dollar. Now it's only a matter of time before the dollar is basically thrown overboard all over the world. And frankly, you know, the leadership of America only have themselves to blame. They abuse the privilege of the world reserve currency. They abused it. Instead of maintaining neutrality of the international settlement currency of the dollar, they weaponized it. And in doing so, they took away the only thing that gave it value, which was supposed to be its neutrality and fungibility, you see. And now you really don't have any fungibility. The only way you can use your dollars is if you have approval of the U.S. regime and the State Department and all the evil demons that are running the show. Now, understand that those weapons of monetary destruction, economic sanctions, that the U.S. government has wielded against the world, those same weapons are also being turned inward against the American people. So economic sanctions, what does that look like applied to an individual? Oh, a central bank digital currency control system. See, you can be economically sanctioned as an individual if you don't obey, or if you're accused of spreading, you know, disinformation, or if you voted for the wrong candidate. Oh, yeah, whatever. You can be economically sanctioned individually because, of course, that's all the U.S. government knows how to do, is to hurt people and to weaponize everything and to punish and coerce and threaten. This is all the U.S. government knows how to do. The U.S. government doesn't know how to build anything, doesn't know how to protect freedom, doesn't know how to express compassion for anybody. They've got no humanity left whatsoever. In fact, there was a great example of this because Joe Biden, he visited Maui. I'll just pronounce it that way for today, Maui instead of Maui. Joe Biden visits Maui, where the government allowed hundreds of children to be burned alive, and where the government's now trying to steal a property where the children were murdered. And Joe Biden says that he thinks he knows what it's like to have a sense of losing a home because 19 years ago in Delaware, he had a small kitchen fire in his home. And it was all put out and it didn't burn the home down. And the fire chief said it was all out and under control in 20 minutes. So according to Joe Biden, that's the same as you having your children burned alive and your town wiped out. And this guy is completely tone deaf to the plight of the people of Lahaina whose lives have been destroyed. I mean, the insensitivity that he demonstrated there has caused the people of Hawaii to scream, F you, as Joe Biden's caravan is driving by. You know, with all the limos and all the security vehicles and everything, which they probably flew over there on a bunch of, military cargo planes to get them there, wasting all kinds of fuel and energy. But they're just screaming, F you, Joe Biden, F you. Can you blame them? Joe Biden, he pretends like he knows what it's like to have your children burned alive. I mean, the guy can barely function. He's on camera saying to the mayor of Maui County, quote, "You look like you played defensive tackle for I don't know who, but somebody good." And then, I mean, really? Why are you cracking football jokes out here? People's children's died. And then he says that the wildfires were a, quote, "national tragedy." That's right, tragedy. This is almost as good as the White House spokesperson say that she couldn't get into any specifics, about anything. Can't get into specifics, And then in response to his story about his little kitchen fire, one of the local residents said, "Hearing you talk about your house that had a little fire, you almost lost your cat and your Corvette. There were children that were incinerated to ash," this person said. "You're so out of touch with the common man, you don't even know how to speak to them. The only way you think you can establish commonality with them is to lie that the same thing happened to you. You are a disgusting, despicable bastard." This is one of the citizens' responses, which is entirely justified. And then we come to find out, by the way, the conspiracy of the cover-up gets even worse. Here's a story from Trending Politics News. FEMA order surfaces for a media blackout of Maui disaster images. So there's a letter, a FEMA dispatch that was sent to a nonprofit organization that's on the way to Maui to help with some disaster relief. And the FEMA letter says that we have to pause on posting on social media and elsewhere new imagery of damage/disaster/debris starting now. They're asking for a full stop on disaster imagery going forward. We have been asked to take down any photos or videos. Our team on the ground is coordinating with the county for further guidance to ensure we remain fully aligned. Yeah, aligned with your cover-up, you criminal bastards. And then they claim it's all about cultural sensitivity. Cultural sensitivity is of the utmost importance in all our response and activities. No, it's a cover-up. You're trying to make sure that the rest of the world doesn't know how bad this is because you burned hundreds of children alive as part of a land grab. You turned off the sirens. You called off the fire department. You turned off the water. You blocked the roads. You probably set the fires. And then you burned people to death. And you just want to cover it up. Because that's what corrupt criminal governments do. That's what FEMA does. Now, you know, of course, if Trump were president and this happened, you know, the letter would say exactly the opposite. Oh, everybody, push out all the images of death and destruction and suffering and dead baby ash, you know, whatever. Because Trump's the president and blame it all on Trump. But since Biden's the president, it's a massive cover-up. Shh, don't talk about what's happening in Lahaina. Shh, don't let the world see the images of the dead children burned alive, hugging their dogs, also burned alive. You know, these are some sick, twisted, demonic, criminal bastards. And they want to cover it all up. And you realize what the upshot of this is? The people of Maui are not going to have their plight seen or heard as much by people who might be donors or rescue workers, people who might offer, you know, financial assistance or food assistance. They're not going to see the images. And so by covering up these images, FEMA is actually interfering with aid operations that would help many of these families that were horribly displaced, and many of them lost loved ones. So FEMA is, you know, Federal Emergency Management Association. Yes, they are managing this emergency by covering it up. That's the management. They're managing it away from the consciousness of the American people. Don't let people see the images. Don't let people hear the stories. Don't let people, you know, interview eyewitnesses or victims. That's what this is. And then they have the gall, you know, at the United Nations to say, oh, disinformation is deadly. You see how it all works? They censor the truth, and then they lie to you while they murder you, which is exactly what I've been warning about here for quite a number of years. By the way, when FEMA actually rounds people up and throws them into death camps and starts exterminating people, you know they're going to cover that up. We've just seen the memo. They're going to say, no photos and videos allowed, you know, of all the body bags or whatever they're using, the guillotines, you know, the death pits. I don't know. What method are they going to use for mass extermination? I'm not sure. Just maybe mass vaccination in the FEMA death camps. But however they decide to do the, you know, final solution against humanity using FEMA death camps, of course they're going to cover that up. And of course they're going to financially reward the FEMA camp managers and operators. Oh, you're going to get a bonus for every dead body that we drag out of here, you know. It's an incentive, you know, for efficiency, to process the correct number of human bodies that come through this facility, because it's all about depopulation and saving the planet. Obviously, you know, it's good for the climate. That's what they're going to be told. Yeah, you're saving the planet, don't you see? You're saving the planet. You're going to get a reward. Extra food credits on your central bank digital currency rationing microchip, or whatever it is. You know, you think that's not coming? Yes, it is. Pretty much everything Alex Jones already predicted is going to happen. That's if you want to know what's coming, that's pretty much it. Just go watch InfoWars for the last 10 years and it's all coming true. It's like Alex Jones was like Nostradamus. He just laid out exactly what's happening. It just took a few years. All right, here's a story from WMTW News 8 at 11. Maine rejects federal money to find and replace dangerous lead pipes, report finds. So, in fact, the state of Washington, also Oregon, Maine, and Alaska have declined all or most of the federal funds of the mix of grants and loans available. And let's see, because the Biden administration printed billions of dollars to remove millions of dangerous lead pipes that can contaminate drinking water and damage the brain development of children. But these four states I mentioned are turning down the funds. We don't want to replace the lead pipes. It's keeping people stupid, so they keep electing Democrats. I mean, look, it's Washington, Oregon, Maine, and Alaska. I know there are quite a few conservatives in all those states, but especially Washington and Oregon, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if their plan is, let's keep, you know, cognitively poisoning the children with lead. That's the only way they're going to support the Democrat agenda. That's the only way they're going to be dumbed down enough to suffer with food inflation and a border invasion and not figure out that it's all because of the Democrats. I mean, you have to be lobotomized to keep voting for Democrats when they're the ones terrorizing your nation and causing all the problems that people are suffering from. So of all this money going to Ukraine, you know, to fight the war, or at least pay bribes and kickbacks to everybody involved, there's billions of dollars. What is this? Something like $15 billion from the 2021 infrastructure law. Again, just massive money printing. They just, let's just print $15 billion and hand it out. But states don't even want the money, because they don't want to replace the lead pipes. So, yeah, we can rebuild Ukraine, maybe. Can't rebuild America, you know. Can't get the lead out of the pipes of the cities and the states. Because, well, that's America now. It's just the land of mass cognitive poisoning and mental retardation by design. And speaking of mass poisoning of the American people, by the way, here's a story from Yahoo News. Residents across multiple states notice strange and worrisome new scent in the air. They're smelling burning plastic, by the way. And the Weather Network reported, let's see, areas of eastern and midwestern Canada, wildfire smoke. But then residents have noticed a burned plastic smell in the air across many areas, including areas outside the wildfires. But this article, which is a cover-up, says, no, that's not burned plastic you're smelling. That's just forest fires. That's what the article says. It's just that, quote, a biomass like branches, trees, and leaves burn. They spew volatile organic compounds into the air, and that's what you're smelling. No, burned trees do not smell like plastic. Plastic has a very particular smell. People are smelling plastic because plastic is burning, and there are two reasons for this. Number one, as we've reported, there are 9 recycling centers that have been set on fire in the last couple of weeks, the first 3 weeks of August so far. So yes, recycling centers are being burned. It's part of the sabotage operations, and they have a lot of plastic, obviously, because that's one of the main things that's recycled. So yeah, there is burned plastic in the air. But the second thing is that, you know, all the biosludge that's, you know, gathered from all the cities in America. You know, human feces and everything that people flush down the toilets, which includes, by the way, little plastic components of, you know, condoms and feminine hygiene products and whatever else, and children's toys that they dropped in the toilet, whatever. All this plastic that gets flushed down the toilet, guess where it ends up? It ends up on the land. Because that's where it's all dumped in America as fertilizer. So it's dumped sometimes in forests, sometimes on farmland, sometimes on government lands. And then when there's a fire, depending on how hot the fire is, you know, the plastic that's in the top layers of the soil, that plastic, you know, gets caught, catches on fire. And then you have burning plastic from the biosludge. So yeah, you're wondering why America stinks like burned plastic in many areas. It's because all the toilet sludge got set on fire, along with other things, you know, the recycling centers and so on. But yeah, plastic is burning. It smells, and it's incredibly toxic. And the media is just pushing disinformation to try to say, no, that's just trees burning. No, it's not. It's way more than trees. So, you know, it's an infrastructure war against we the people, as I've been reporting here for several days. They're They're running sabotage operations, government terrorism operations, psyops, biological weapons attacks, and much more. And of course, the financial attacks are just one of the vectors of that. And there's a new story out of the UK Daily Mail. Debanking row breaks out after Bank of America shuts down account for ultra-conservative Christian charity that serves impoverished Ugandans. It's called Indigenous Advance Ministries, which promotes a pro-life stance and anti-same-sex relationship values. That's what's reported by the UK Daily Mail. In other words, they're not pushing LGBT agendas. It was debanked by Bank of America because of its conservative Christian views. So, but Bank of America says, no, that's not true. Religious beliefs are not a factor. BS, Bank of America, you criminals. Debanking nonprofits that are feeding Ugandans. I mean, come on. This is based out of Memphis. They've filed a complaint with the Tennessee Attorney General's office over concerns that its accounts were closed because the bank disagrees with its religious views. Yeah, you know what I think? I think that the CEOs and top managers of JP Chase, or JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and any other large financial institutions, I think they should be criminally indicted and prosecuted for violating the civil rights of individuals who they have debanked. That's what I think should happen. And by the way, the top people at PayPal should also be incarcerated and imprisoned for a very long time because they have debanked all the, I mean, so many conservatives and Trump supporters and myself included, simply because of our viewpoints. And that is a crime. And that should be prosecuted. Can you imagine if, let's say, Bank of America just decided to start debanking people because they were black? Yeah, right. Can you imagine the outcry? You'd have black folks marching up in arms at every Bank of America branch across America, which would be the right thing to do if that happened. But because the debanking isn't targeting, you know, black people, well, now it's just targeting Christian groups. Well, suddenly it's okay, apparently, and, you know, there's no outcry. Or what if JP Morgan Chase said that no banking services for gays? Right? That'd be an outrage. The gay community would be up in arms. They would gather in the streets in their underwear and scarves with finely polished pitchforks marching against JP Morgan in unison in a creative gallop. But they would at least be dedicated to it. You know what I'm saying? And they would be right to do so. And JP Morgan Chase would back down and issue them, we're so sorry for targeting gay people. But when they target Christians, we didn't target Christians. No. You just banned all the Christians. Oh, no, we didn't. No, that was, we debanked them for some other reason. Well, what reason was that? Oh, we can't tell you. It's national security. They always tell you that. We can't tell you why we debanked you. It's a security issue. So you realize that in this case, this nonprofit was debanked because they promote marriage between a man and a woman. So in other words, Bank of America is kind of saying that you have to support, you know, the trans cult and the LGBT belief system. Otherwise, you know, we don't want your money here. So I guess they only want trans money. I mean, are they okay with Jeffrey Epstein money? Because JP Morgan Chase was okay with that. They did a lot of business with Jeffrey Epstein and the island involving a lot of trafficked children. How much of the money that went through Chase is tainted with the blood of innocent raped children? How about that? But they had no problem with that. Oh, it's raped children money. It's welcome here at Chase. Bank of America is probably saying, oh, it's grooming child mutilation money? Yeah, just deposit here, you know. You're welcome here. Bank with us. Mutilate children. But if you're handing food out to Ugandans who want to be Christians, oh, no, that's not allowed. That's, no, That's evil. these financial institutions are like twisted, demonic entities. It's like, I wouldn't be surprised if Bank of America had a whole new promotion. Welcome to Bank of America. Are you interested in our new child trafficking checking accounts? Yes. Wherever you get your money, we just look the other way. And for every unclaimed child that you march through a lobby of a Bank of America branch near you, we give you a complimentary coupon to visit a chemical castration center near you. This is what corporate America has become. Like a South Park episode. Just pure, insane, demonic, just criminality and cruelty towards humanity. Just off the charts insane. What do you say about the evil that has just swept across every institution in America now? You know, the government, the banks, the media, the culture, the academia, science, if it, you can even call it that anymore. It's just on and on. It's just pure evil. I'm kind of thinking the only guy that's not evil in the entire music industry is this Oliver guy that's singing the Richmond North of Richmond. He's like the only guy who's not just taking millions to sell out, you know? That's why everybody loves him, because he's like, I don't need millions. I just need my guitar and a song and a microphone in my backyard and an iPhone to film it. And that's it, you know? Kudos, man. Hey, we're going to jump into the interview here shortly with Ann Vandersteel, who has a lot more comments on all of this, as you might expect. A couple of personal notes and a couple of programming things to share with you. First of all, the episode of Decentralized TV with Scott Kesterson of Bards FM. I thought it was going to air yesterday. I was wrong. It's actually airing tomorrow. So look for that to get posted Thursday on decentralized.tv. Secondly, you know how I regrew the nerves of my finger using, well, lion's mane mushroom and some, you know, photonic, like therapeutic light, infrared light, and tuning forks and a bunch of nutrition and so on. And I just wanted to share with you, remember how I said the sensitivity of my fingertip now is maybe 150, maybe even up to 200% what it used to be because I regrew the nerves. You know, I lost some sensitivity for a while. And then when the nerves grew back after I had that, you know, extreme ligament damage and nerve, my nerves were severed on the lateral part of the finger. And after they grew back, you know, I had this super sensitivity. I want to tell you that sensitivity continues to persist. It has not faded. And so I am walking around with this like mutant hypersensitive fingertip. For some, like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, I was joking before, like maybe I could read Braille. I'm pretty sure I could if I put some time into it, and that would actually be a very useful thing to do. But the sensitivity is so high, it's like I've never had a finger this sensitive, you know? And every time I touch anything with this finger, it's like, whoa, you know, there's no pain. It's just like sensory overload is like all this texture, all this information coming in that's just disproportionate to all my other fingers. So I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like this. If you had like a hypersensitive part of your body or an appendage or something that was just like, whoa, why is this like super sensitive? But I'm walking around with this index finger now in that state, and it's very weird. And then the other thing I mentioned kind of casually the other day in the podcast that I thought everybody could hear where the walls are around them just by, you know, listening. Just the audio effects of what it sounds like when your voice or other sounds are bouncing off the walls. And I had some people push back on that. You can't hear the walls. Man. So I'm actually setting up an experiment or a demonstration to show you. I'm going to go into the studio and I'm going to put on a blind mask, like a total head cover, eye cover of some kind. And I'm trying to acquire a dart gun, you know, like a kid's dart gun. And I'm going to take the dart gun and I'm going to have somebody walking around me with a giant like piece of cardboard or something. And then blinded, I'm going to shoot the darts and hit the wall, hit the cardboard where it is just by using sense of sound. So I'm planning on setting that up and demonstrating that for you, because I don't know why this is even controversial, because I've always been able to hear where there's a wall and where there's not a wall. And I don't know, maybe that's something different about my neurology or why I got into music and why I have this also very unusual talent of being able to identify people by their voice fingerprint. So I can always, like, if an advertisement ever plays and it's some famous person's voice, you know, instantly I'm like, oh, that's Morgan Freeman, you know, or boom, that's Matt Damon, whatever. I have this, you know, instant voice fingerprinting capability. So I'm very sensitive to, you know, spectral audio analysis. So anyway, I'm planning on doing this for you, and I'm open to suggestions on how to do this. But I remember in the Marvel Comics universe, there was a character called Daredevil. And Daredevil was visually blind, but Daredevil could hear and could fight just by hearing everything, you know, echolocation, which is pretty much what I'm talking about. So I guess I'm going to do like a Daredevil demonstration in the studio and kind of see how that goes. But hope it works. I mean, the hardest part is finding a dart gun. Did you know that? It's very difficult to find a dart gun these days. The only thing you can really find are dart crossbows, which is not exactly what I want. I just want a little pistol that shoots little toy darts. And apparently that's very difficult to find. But if I can pull all this stuff together, I'll do a demonstration for you. We'll call it, you know, the Daredevil Challenge. And then I thought, you know, with my hypersensitive finger, maybe I could read a little Braille, and I could actually just, like, go through the world for a couple of days without using my eyes. Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, just to try to see the world, I'm sorry, not see, but I mean to experience the world in the way that a visually impaired person experiences the world. Wouldn't that be, I'm sorry about the metaphors. I was thinking about the wrong metaphor for that. It would be a mind-expanding experience to do that. And it would also be, I think, compassionate to experience the world from the sensory reality that a visually impaired person experiences. And because, you know, with my finger injury recently, I was able to experience the world with a small taste of what it's like to be physically impaired, right? Couldn't use that whole hand for a while. Couldn't use the finger for a long time. So that's a small taste of somebody who's missing a limb. And so it gave me a lot of compassion for, you know, people injured, veterans, or people who are born without limbs or non-functioning arms or legs or hands or what have you. And so, and I think it would be a really enlightening experiment to voluntarily go sightless for 48 hours. And if I can find 48 hours, I might do that. I don't know. I mean, I would have to have some assistance, I'm pretty sure. I would have to notice a lot of things first before I do that. Maybe get like a, you know, the kind of cane that visually impaired people use. You know, because you tap the cane in front of you, make sure you're not about to walk into like a pit or something. You can't necessarily hear a pit, you know. So I don't know. I'm just sharing that with you. I don't have any solid plans yet in that realm, but it's something I want to share with you. Okay, now the other thing I want to share is that, you know, I was learning speed cubing on the Rubik's Cube quite a lot before I injured my finger. That finger injury put a total pause on the Rubik's Cube speed cubing solving, but since my finger has now recovered, I'm back into speed cubing. And a couple of observations to share with you that I think are, you might find relevant as well. Number one, for the most part, the muscle memory that I had already built, it was all there. I didn't lose much of anything. I struggled with a couple of algorithms and then just had to look up the sequence and then, oh yeah, that's it. And then I got it again. But for the most part, everything was still there. And so I'm learning now more algorithms. In this case, I'm learning the working on the 21 algorithms, that's the permutations of the last layer, or PLL, as it's called. And each of these permutations requires you to recognize the certain sequence of what the cube looks like on the top layer, which usually is yellow on top. And then it requires you to carry out a permutation sequence of turns in order to get all, you know, to solve the final layer. And the way I learned this, that again, I think is relevant to all of us, is instead of trying to practice 21 algorithms, I just practice one. I just do one algorithm over and over and over again until it becomes second nature. And then I move on to the next one. And it might take many days for that one algorithm to just really sink in. And it's pretty easy to memorize one algorithm, you know, cognitively, just to think through the sequence and do it. And so, for example, there's a permutation called RA that swaps the position of two corners and two edge pieces in a certain configuration. So, and it uses a lot of left-handed moves, which are kind of not that common in speed cubing. So I'm just working on RA over and over and over again and doing the swaps back and forth until RA becomes, like, you don't have to think about it. Once that becomes part of your memory and your muscles just do it, you know, like riding a bicycle or, you know, picking up a fork or whatever, or tying your shoes. Once that becomes second nature, then you pick up, you know, the next algorithm, the next permutation, and add that. That's how you learn. And I think the same thing is true in dietary habits, lifestyle changes, and also prepping. So if you're trying to learn prepping, for example, I would say don't try to learn, you know, 21 skills all at once. Learn one skill and use that skill, practice that skill, demonstrate it until it becomes second nature. Whatever that skill might be, it might be just a way to maybe baking bread by grinding wheat berries, you know, just focus on that. Just make wheat berry bread every weekend for a month until it becomes second nature. And then when you nail that, then move on to the next thing. What's the next thing? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's learning how to stitch up a wound. I don't know. You can buy the wound stitch kits. You can do your own stitches. Have fun with that. And then you learn that, and then you move on. Just focus on one thing at a time. Same thing with changing your food and lifestyle habits. So if you're trying to clean up your diet, let's say, instead of taking everything out of your diet that maybe you don't want to be eating anymore, it's like, oh, I'm going to get rid of all the pepperoni pizza and the Pop-Tarts and the diet soda and the fried foods and all this stuff. Just do one thing at a time. Just say, hey, for the following week, I'm going to have no pepperoni pizza or whatever it is. And just get that out of your diet. Get it out of your life until that's second nature. You don't need that. You're not craving that anymore. And then do the next thing. And same thing's true with adding things into your daily smoothie. Right? It's about incrementalism. Doing things just little small steps, but daily. So my smoothie, the one that I show you on camera all the time, it's got a lot of stuff in it. It's probably way too much stuff for a typical person to just pick up and drink and enjoy. You know, because there's turmeric in there. I've got, you know, freeze-dried broccoli sprouts in there and flax seeds and, you know, bee pollen and a bunch of stuff. And a typical person picks that up and takes a drink. They're like, what is all this stuff? Well, it didn't start out that way. It started out super delicious. Just bananas and avocados, coconut water, and some whey protein, and I don't know what else. Maybe a little bit of flaxseed. It's super delicious, like ice cream. You get enough bananas and avocados in there, and it's like a milkshake, I'm telling you. Because the avocados are like the milk fat, you know? And so you can drink that for a month until you just totally get used to it. And then you can start adding a little bit. Oh, let's throw some chlorella powder in there. Look, it's more green. And then the chlorella has a certain taste, and you're like, whoa. So you go easy on that. And then you just try that for a week or two. And then eventually you become used to the chlorella. Or maybe you alternate it with spirulina. I do that. Some days it's spirulina, some days it's chlorella. Some days it's none. Some days it's something totally different. Lately I've been putting a lot of collagen powder in the smoothies because of, you know, healing my ligaments and everything. So I've been drinking a lot of collagen. And that alters the taste a little bit too, not much, but, you know, enough to notice. So you just do these things just incrementally, one little thing at a time until it becomes second nature. And then you find that over the span of a few months, you've made some real revolutionary changes in your life, or you've learned an entirely new skill set. Or, like with Rubik's Cube, oh, I've picked up 21 new algorithms somehow in the last, 3 months or whatever. That's how you do it. Just a little piece at a time. Don't bite off more than you can chew, and don't set crazy high expectations like, I'm going to change everything by Monday. No, probably not. That's a recipe for failure. You could probably change one thing by Monday. Let's be realistic for all of us. We change one thing, that's doing good. And then pick another Monday and change another thing. And don't put crazy, unrealistic pressures on yourself. Also, your brain takes time to incorporate new habits, obviously. And the power of building new habits is the power of self-transformation. And I also happen to think, by the way, that I'm drinking lion's mane mushroom because that's one of the things that's in my smoothie now because, it helps regrow nerves. Well, I think that lion's mane, this is my theory, I think that lion's mane actually helps you learn more thoroughly when you are dreaming. And dreaming is a learning process where your brain is reorganizing the information that you were exposed to during the day. Dreaming is actually learning, or let's say it's structuring the experience of the day in a way that creates understanding. And over the years, the best way that I've always learned things was to do a lot of reading or a lot of hands-on experience and then sleep really well. Make sure you get plenty of sleep, good 8 hours. And then you wake up, you've learned something because your brain has now incorporated what you were just exposed to the day before. But without the sleep, it doesn't stick. Well, I think that if you have lion's mane mushroom circulating, in your blood and in your neurology when you're sleeping, I think that this is just my theory. I can't prove it, but I think that lion's mane mushroom causes your sleep to accelerate the reorganization and linking of your experiential learning. So I actually think that lion's mane is a nutritional booster, let's say, of learning, which happens when you sleep. So I'm very curious for some feedback on this, by the way. If you're trying to learn something new, maybe a new language, or maybe a new skill, like I'm doing with the Rubik's Cube, or maybe you're learning a new job function or whatever. Maybe you're going back to school and learning something there. Try this combination of lion's mane mushroom and good sleeping hours, and let me know if that's working for you to just create like hyper learning capabilities, because that's been my experience, and I want to know if others can benefit from that as well. And one more thing to mention on the whole learning chapter here. They say that when you get older, you don't learn as quickly, and I found that that's completely false. I found that the older I get, the faster I learn. And I don't know if that has to do with nutrition, probably, or what, or just an existing knowledge base. But when I was in my teens and in my 20s, academically, I was top of the class and, acing the college entrance exams and all that stuff. But I would say that I was still very much impaired in terms of learning and understanding things then compared to where I am now. And I'm wondering if you share this as well. If you think back about your teenage years and how hard was it to learn things that now seem really, really simple. I think about things that you learned in high school. I don't know, maybe even, geometry, math class or something. Or if you're trying to learn a language. I remember in college, I took Espanol, and it was the most crazy difficult thing that I had ever experienced. In college, I could not learn Spanish. And to this day, it was still confusing why it was so difficult. Because, later in life, when I moved to Ecuador, then I began learning it very, very rapidly. And ultimately, took my driver's license test in Ecuador in Espanol, both written and verbal in Spanish, passed it. And I was one of the few Americans there that actually had a local driver's license that passed all the tests. I mean, there were other people that spoke a lot better Spanish than I did, but I was doing pretty well for somebody who had a horrible time with it in college. But I'm wondering if you have the same experience, thinking back. Have you found that your ability to learn new things now is much more accelerated than it was when you were in your early 20s, let's say? Because that's what I'm experiencing, and I'm thinking it has a lot to do with nutrition. Because when I was in college, I did not eat well. I was drinking sodas and aspartame, and I was eating junk food. You know, I was eating Chicken McNuggets when I could afford them, and other, you know, college dorm food crap, whatever that was. Hey, Taco Tuesday, what is this? I'm not even sure this is a taco. But that's not even allowed anymore, by the way. That's called cultural appropriation now. But we had Taco Tuesday, and then we had like Mystery Meat Monday also on top of that. But I was not healthy back then, and I think that that's part of this. So nutrition counts. It helps you rebuild from injuries, regrow nerves. It helps you learn in a hyper-accelerated fashion. It helps you organize information and retain information and make personal transformation decisions on a daily incremental basis that can ultimately revolutionize your own future. And I believe that nutrition is the basis for a lot of this, or at least it should be considered an adjunct therapy in order to enable all of these transformations. If you're stuck in your life, and I don't mean to make this, you know, like a Tony Robbins seminar or anything, but if you're stuck in your life and you can't get past something, have you tried changing your diet and then try the other personal change thing after that? Because what you consume, your nutrition, is a big part of enabling your mind and your neurology to make major changes. Think about that. Maybe you can apply that in some areas of your life and have some good results. All right, with that said, we're about to jump into the interview with Ann Vandersteel. Thank you for listening to my little personal report there. Hope some of that's useful for you. And if you'd like to, in fact, explore some new nutrition, check us out, healthrangerstore.com. You know, did you know we have black cumin seed extract? Did you know we have turmeric? Did you know we have, you know, anthocyanins and super fruit, sea powder, and all kinds of amazing, truly amazing products there, including N-acetylcysteine, or NAC as it's known, or some people pronounce it N-acetylcysteine. But NAC, we have our own formula now. It's in stock, it's available now, and people are loving it. We're getting a great response, and a lot of people are giving us positive feedback because it's been difficult to find NAC, and of course, nobody does as much lab testing as we do on our products, you know, heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology, E. coli, salmonella, aflatoxin testing for the nuts and seeds, and we're adding atrazine testing for certain products. And, oh, we just did receive the final component of our dioxin testing mass spec instrument. So there's, that just happened. There's actually a couple of components. There's a mass spec, and then there's a GC interface, a gas chromatography. So we just got the final component, which I think was the interface, that just showed up. And so, you know, we're almost there. Now we have to get it installed at the lab, and, you know, technicians have to set it all up, and then we have to run calibrations and then method validations and then do sample prep validations on the food samples. And, once we get all that done, then we'll be able to start actually running off-the-shelf samples and seeing how much dioxin we see in these foods. And it's taken us many months to get to this point. I mean, like over half a year. But we finally have all the hardware that we needed, and we'll be cranking out some dioxin testing, I'm quite confident, before the end of this year. And so when that happens, by the way, expect a video tour of this new instrument. And in fact, well, the expanded lab, I haven't given you a tour of the lab for several years, and we've added a lot of instruments. So it is a kick-ass mass spec lab now. I can't wait to show it to you. You're going to see all the instruments that we use. We've got two ICP-MS instruments for heavy metals testing, by the way, because like our original one got so old that the company that makes it has stopped supporting it. That's like, wow. So we had to buy a whole new ICP-MS in order to be able to make sure we can get parts and everything. That's, crazy. So anyway, that video will be coming soon. In the meantime, enjoy this interview with Ann Vandersteel and support us at healthrangerstore.com. Thanks for listening. Welcome to today's live interview here on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and I'm joined in studio today by a very special guest, Ann Vandersteel. Her show is called Right Now with Ann Vandersteel. She's a featured host on Brighteon.tv and has her own shows and is hosting InfoWars and doing a lot of other things. She and Michael Yon have been on the border, Texas border with Mexico, and she's got a lot of intel to share with us today. Welcome to the studio, Ann. It's great to have you here for the first time ever in person.
I know, it's fantastic. And what a beautiful studio you have indeed. Congratulations on everything you're building out here.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, look, we have to give credit to Bob Denny and the Brighteon TV team.
That's right.
As well, it wouldn't be possible without them. But yeah, we've been here running for quite some time, and but you've been running across, you know, out around the border for real. You and Michael Yon, who's going to be joining us here in a minute, and tell us what you're seeing. I mean, how bad is the situation?
You know, it's really sad, Mike, because America is such a beautiful country. God's tapestry has been tainted by the fact our federal government, which is nothing but a bunch of demon scoundrels of public-private partnerships raping and pillaging their way through our wallets, has basically abandoned their responsibilities of the tax dollars to take care of our country. And the infrastructure is terrible. Cities are raped and pillaged. You know, people are broke. The open border policy is decimating our cities with crime and with immigrants that are a tax burden on everybody. But they're also bringing disease in. And Michael Yon and I put together Operation Burning Edge because America is burning. The flag, the fringes of our flag are aflame. And freedom is almost, you know, extinguished at this point. So what we decided to do was, you know, basically take advantage of the information that Michael has aggregated in his trips around the world, looking at what's going over in Europe, over in Holland and Belgium, and you know, the tri-state cities that they're building, which is a new global world order's headquarters, if you will.
Yes.
In addition to the travels he's done down in the Darien Gap numerous times, watching the migrant flows, where they're coming from, the fact that the Venezuelan ambassador to Iran is rubber stamping Iranians with Venezuelan passports and sending them up through the border. And then, of course, watching this migrant flow and analyzing what's happening right here in Texas, we decided to start at SpaceX and move westward over the course of August. But somewhere along our journey in McAllen, Texas, we had a little bit of a mission change where we decided to pivot into the child trafficking area. And the reason being is we had actionable intelligence presented to us thanks to the producer Ryan Matta for Kyle Serafin's show. He connected us with Carlos Arellano, who is a federal whistleblower that has worked in the non-governmental organization space since 2016. And that's all he's done. And he had unbelievable intelligence about these massive NGOs like Southwest Key Programs, SLS, MVN. These are all big NGOs that warehouse, like in concentration camps, children from 5 months of age through the age of 18 by the hundreds of thousands around the country. But what's even more
disturbing, right here in the United States.
Right here in the United States.
Warehousing children who have been trafficked across the border.
Absolutely trafficked, groomed and trafficked, lured here for PlayStations and air conditioning and a better life and all sorts of, you know, tantalizing, you know, things for the children that they don't have where they come from. But they're being lured here and then they're held in these warehouses because these NGOs are making billions of dollars. Basically holding these kids hostage, if you will, and then moving them from facility to facility around the country. And then sometimes, sadly to say, Mike, and this is why you're hearing numbers from the Biden regime about 350,000 kids with 85,000 missing. Well, the numbers are bigger than that. But these children are being removed from the warehouses and they're being placed into homes around the country. But what's most disconcerting is that the people's homes in which they're going are illegal aliens. So that takes them out of the federal register. So they're off the grid, essentially, and they're lost. And the reports we're getting back from these children is they're being pimped out and sex trafficked.
Right.
So it's just a horrific human rights violation financed by the federal government, your tax dollars at work. And, you know, Joe Biden is the largest purveyor of human trafficking with his cohort.
And Mayorkas.
Mayorkas.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Groomed from the Obama regime.
This is extraordinary what you're reporting here. And again, this isn't just, you know, secondhand, thirdhand information. You and Michael Yon have been talking directly with people who have, you know, firsthand eyewitnesses and knowledge of this, and whistleblowers in many cases.
Right.
And you also documented, I believe, that there's a city being built in Texas for illegals.
That's right. We've now called it Abbott City because Trey Harris, who's behind the development down in northeast Houston in Liberty County, it's a giant multi-phase development that is done most haphazardly. In fact, we had somebody who's is a subcontractor in DHS, but also develops property and looked at this facility and says, this is not developed like normal developments. Usually banks will finance phase one, and as that starts to build out, they'll finance phase two and so on and so forth. But instead, they have all multi-phases going at once. They're moving dirt around in somewhat of an unrandom or random fashion. You see a lot of machinery out there just doing stuff with nothing inside of it. It's just sort of like they're clocking miles so they can launder the money through these contracts. But they are slumlord conditions. You have trailers with MS-13 gang symbols on there. You'll have many of those. Then all of a sudden, a really nice house will pop up in the middle of that complete slumlord condition, as if that's sort of the kingpin's house. And it's disconcerting from the air because you're looking at 30, 40 square miles of something that's right next to the Woodlands in Texas, which is a very nice community. And this is built specifically for illegals to be in there. And because of the way it's being financed through the owners buying lots in there with high interest rates, when the owners go belly up, the illegals, that is, the developer takes it back and sells it to the next person who improves that property and improves that property. And eventually this developer is going to capitalize so on all the improvements made that they'll be able to flip this around into something else. But more concerning is the fact that Abbott knows it's there. He's taken $1.4 million from Trey Harris in campaign contributions. And he was recently in McAllen, Texas, where we witnessed him talking with the mayor of McAllen about the expansion of the international bridge going into Mexico, encouraging the trade of produce and agriculture coming in from Mexico with appeal on there, as you are well familiar with right. that. Meanwhile, the farmers in McAllen, Texas are battling back whether or not their agriculture is going to get paved over because of the tax incentives to have retail and commercial property versus the ag property.
But what else is concerning about this is it functions really as kind of a beachhead for illegals to occupy Texas.
It does.
And then from there, I mean, I don't know how many people can fit in this city eventually. What could it be?
It's about 200,000.
200,000?
In just this Colonia or just this Abbott City. But there's more Colonias that are popping up all over Texas. This is not just outside Houston. You are seeing them pop up as we were going westward looking at the map towards El Paso. We could see Colonias outside Laredo, outside Roma, and on the way. So this is not a one-off situation. This is because we have such an influx of illegal migrants. And Customs and Border Protection, Mike, are just basically the handholders to hand them off to these NGOs and process them and look the other way. They're
that's
getting
right,
paid
right.
to traffic the people in.
I want to mention your website first. It's called rightnow.news is where you can find Anne Vandersteel's shows and links, including to her show on Brighttown.tv, which is extremely well-produced, very popular. People are loving the show. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback about it. And you do an excellent job. I don't even know how you gather all this intel so quickly and package it all together. But I also want to mention then back to our story in Lahaina in Maui.
Yeah.
You know, so they're burning out Americans and burning their children alive, right? Shut off the water, call off the fire department, don't activate the sirens, make sure everybody dies. And then the government comes in and says, well, we're going to seize that land from you.
Right.
Meanwhile, illegals have cities being built for them.
Right.
So it's very clear, if you're an American, even a native Hawaiian American, you have been slated for termination.
Right.
And for your property to be confiscated by the empire that is replacing you.
That's right. Again, this goes back to what Joe Biden signed on January 10th of this year, 2023, right? He signed the North American Declaration, which ostensibly is dissolving the borders between Canada and Mexico. So Canada, United States, and Mexico are one big homogenized continent. That's it. It's one big country, and it's about the free flow of the migrant population in and out. Of course we know they're the replacement population. The World Economic Forum's playbook is all about artificial intelligence, transhumanism, and the people that have white-collar jobs can be replaced with AI. I know people out there today, journalists, I hate to say it, are using AI to write their own books. This right. is, and again, these are the same journalists that are reporting on how bad AI is in the sense of the fact that people can use it to write their own book. So, you know, if we are going to be true to our values, we have to say no to everything they're putting in front of us. We have to start using their technology against them, which is why what you do here is so important, the Bridie on TV network. We have to capitalize on the ability to have a free speech platform standing alone in a parallel economy. What the Department of Homeland Security has done in terms of dissolving the borders in conjunction with Joe Biden, in conjunction with the Bank of International Settlements, which is financing the WEF and all of these UN propagandists out there, we have got to stand up and do the parallel economy. And again, I heard Vivek Ramaswamy earlier today on Alex Jones's show, where we just came from shooting that show, talk about this is 1776 all over again.
Yeah.
We need that revolution. I've been calling it a retrolution now for 2 years for fear the FBI is going to bang down my door for saying the R word. But frankly, a revolution doesn't have to be violent. It can be a revolution of ideas and of ideologies and of government. And our founding fathers made that very clear in the Declaration of Independence. There is a time when we need to alter or abolish. And right now we need to alter and abolish what we have because it's not working for us. It's only working for a very select few.
Well, you're exactly right that it's not working, and that's all by design. And it's very clear now, in fact, Alex Jones was just reporting on this, that they're going to be pushing another wave of COVID, mass hysteria, and more masking, more lockdowns, more mandatory vaccines, and most importantly for the 2024 election, mandatory mail-in ballots nationwide,
right.
So that the Democrats can rig the whole thing again. They're just going to run the playbook over again.
Right.
This is the only way they can maintain power because they can't win in a fair election, as you know. So do you think that it's going to be effective, or will there be too much resistance now because so many people have awakened to the plandemic fraud that we just lived through?
Well, again, people are awake to the plandemic fraud. I mean, there's been lots of reporting on that. Sound of Freedom just came out. People understand child sex trafficking is real. It really happens. But I don't see the outrage yet. They talk about it at the cocktail parties, and they talk about it in the line at supermarkets and whatnot. But people aren't showing up. So that's one of the reasons that Michael and I are going to really dive deep on this human trafficking, and specifically child sex trafficking, is we're going to start identifying, Alex has given us his platform next week for the entire 4 hours, to start showing people where these facilities are so that if people really want to get outraged, they can show up and protest. They can go to these homes and say, what are you doing with these children there? We have to start exposing this stuff. But sadly, you know what, Mike, and these are all things that we understand the playbook of the past and we can predict the future. So the fact that they're going to lock us down and do mail-in voting to me is not a surprise. I've been predicting that for 2 years. We could see that coming. That was the only way they'll win. What we need to do now is we need to help hasten this bank collapse. And the fact that Fitch is out there reporting that, Goldman Sachs and thank God JP Morgan are unstable, and yet they're into the trillions and trillions of dollars of bad debt right now because they don't have the gold to back up the ETFs they've been pushing.
Right.
They're going to collapse. Again, predictable. It has to happen. And once that happens, just like President Trump has used the power of trade in the wallet to keep countries from going into full-blown civil war, World War III, we're going to be able to use the power of the wallet to basically get people off their chairs, off from behind the keyboards, and start to take action. But we have to take action in a sane and civilized fashion akin to what our Constitution defines. And that's one of the reasons why I'm a big supporter of what David Zuniga has started with tacticalcivics.com, getting people mobilized into citizen grand juries and constitutionally supported Second Amendment militias, not the kind that go out and start a war, the kind that defend and protect your rights. And when your sheriff doesn't stand up for your rights, when an indictment has been leveled by a grand jury and the sheriff won't make the arrest, well, we need that militia to do that. They go and act in place of the sheriff. They're the true law enforcement of, by, and for the people. We've got to get back to the basics. And the sooner Americans realize that, the better. And I think the banking collapse will actually hasten that sort of thinking.
You know, let's talk about the banking collapse, because you were saying really that there needs to be a hastening of the collapse of the fiat currency system. And I tend to agree that there's so much evil associated with money printing and the dollar that the only way that evil ever ends is if their ability to keep printing that currency also ends, which is coming. But were you aware that Evergrande just filed for bankruptcy in the United States, Chapter 15 bankruptcy, and that most of the debt that Evergrande, the Chinese property developer, I know you know this, but just for our audience, most of the debt that they issued was actually issued to U.S. and European banks and institutional investors and some retirement funds and so on, which means that this bankruptcy filing in the U.S. is going to cause essentially a default on those debt obligations. And we're going to have a ripple effect of hundreds of billions of dollars now through the Western banking system because of the Evergrande property Ponzi scheme collapsing in China. And that clock just started ticking.
Right. Well, how many other opportunities? I'm going to call it an opportunity. How many other opportunities are like that out there right now to help hasten the collapse of the banking system that is built on fiat currency to begin with. And the fact that the Chinese were able to put that into our shoulders and we're basically going to bear the brunt of that, right? We're going to take that right in the kisser because they got us to finance everything for them. And this is what they've been very, very good at. This is called fifth generation warfare. This is just one aspect of the war they're waging, whether it's the chemical jihad or the fentanyl and the precursors to fentanyl coming through Mexico and being sold into our country, slaughtering hundreds of thousands of Americans, whether it's the Chinese military that are coming across the border, whether it's the Chinese that are already installed here that have been stealing our IP and sending it overseas back to China for them to profit and make, you know, billions of dollars on, or you know, whatever it is, this is all part of their plan. So yes, that's going to be one aspect of the ripple effect. And it's going to also a dovetail. I think JP Morgan, I predicted this a year ago, that JP Morgan would be the ultimate pinnacle bank to collapse. And it has to be because they were the same bank that managed not to get on the Titanic. The original JP Morgan sidestepped the Titanic when that ship sank.
And they also did business with Jeffrey Epstein.
And he did business with Jeffrey Epstein. Yep. And look at what happened. Jim Crown, right, who was also on the board of J.P. Morgan, also very familiar with Jeffrey Epstein. He died in a single car accident.
Oh, that's right.
In Aspen, the day after we left, as a matter of fact, we left Aspen. He died. We had just prayed in downtown Aspen with Lindell TV's crew. We were praying in the open with lots of people in the park there that day, saying we need to reclaim Aspen back for good. And the next day, the head of the snake in Aspen of the Aspen Institute, Jim Crown died, who's also on the board for JP Morgan. So these are the things that are, oddly enough, this war that's going on between the good hats and the bad hats, the white hats, the black hats, it's really real, but it's being facilitated also by people like you and me and many others that are out here helping expose all this information, which is putting pressure on these bad people to act in haste and make decisions that are not helpful to them. And I think President Trump actually really facilitated getting COVID into the public ethos. I disagree with him on the vaccines 100%, and I'm still waiting for him to say something about that because he has the information now. But again, he did push hydroxychloroquine first. He did push ivermectin. He pushed alternative therapy. So you can't hold him 100%. He didn't mandate any of it. But, you know, come on, let's own up to the fact that people are dying.
Well, I completely agree with you that the establishment is getting sloppy.
They are.
Because they're rushed. I mean, even back to the Lahaina fires.
Right.
It was so sloppy. You know, that book was released on Amazon on August 10th.
I know.
Called Fire and Fury. You know, the book that claims it does this deep analysis of
did ChatGPT do that analysis?
I'm telling you. No, I mean, it's supposed to be by a PhD. Clearly, it would have taken months to write a book like that.
Right.
Right. But they released it before the fires even finished burning out the children of Lahaina. And so what it tells you is they got sloppy. They're leaving behind too many trails. The timing is off. The book should have been delayed, obviously, until after the fires. They got caught not sounding the sirens. There are reports now that people are receiving eviction notices. The governor of Hawaii signed an executive order to allow him to seize the property from Lahaina and then to eventually turn it over to wealthy property developers that are going to donate to his campaign. It's just these signs are so obvious now. You know, remember the Barack Obama days? Obama was not a low IQ false flag operator. I mean, Obama's false flags were pretty clever. They covered up all the loose ends, you know. They pulled off a lot of false flags, a lot of shootings and all kinds of things, but they covered it up quite expertly. Today, the incompetence of the Biden regime is really showing in the fact that they can't even fake these events with a sense of competence.
No, they can't. But at the same token, they do it without impunity because where do we hold them accountable, Mike? We don't have a court system.
Well, right.
I mean, they really know that they can be so in your face. What if he say today, Biden said something about we are laser focused. Actually, it was the other day we're laser focused and we're going to give everybody $700. Meanwhile, billions is going to Ukraine.
Right.
Are you kidding me? That is such an insult to these people. I mean, I am so offended for the people of Lahaina that have lost everything. Front Street is wiped out. We're talking about generations of Hawaiians that have lived there. They pass their property down and down and down. They don't care about property values. They care about the sanctity of the heritage of what their family has developed on that particular part of the island.
Right.
And the fact that he's offering $700 and now the governor is going to basically eminently domain this property for the state. Of course, Oprah's estate and Ellison's estate and everybody else that's out there, nobody lost anything. None of the wealthy, the uber rich, the uber elite, the true demons, they are unscathed. So again, we don't have somewhere to in this current system to go and get justice, but we do. It's called the Declaration of Independence, and it's called the Constitution. We have to get back to the basics. We basically offshored that to our corporate representatives, if you can even call them representatives, or your corporate congressman, your corporate senator. We have offshored the responsibility of governing ourselves to people that were selected and we never really elected them. Well, we've got to pull it back. We've got to atone for those sins that we haven't done our civic duty.
What do you think about rising calls for peaceful secession, and including in Hawaii now? Because in the aftermath of this, I've never seen more Native Hawaiians actually speaking out and talking about how they now realize that they're an occupied nation. You know, since 1959, when it joined the Union through a referendum, which probably was rigged. You know, vote fraud goes all the way back decades.
Right.
But, you know, before that, it was, I think, King Kamehameha, and it was the Polynesian descendants that had their own island nation taken over by the U.S. Empire as a military base, an intelligence base, to control the people. And now the empire is murdering the Native Hawaiian people. And a lot of Hawaiians are waking up, even though they tend to vote Democrat in every election. Now, many are starting to question that. Do you think that talk of secession will continue to spread even in Texas and other places?
You know, I love this conversation. This is one of my favorite topics. I'm a state national and I seceded from the United States. I simply removed that status from my name. I'm now an American. That's what we all are fundamentally. We're all Americans. And, you know, if you want to look at history and you really want to talk about secession, you got to go back to 1868. Post the Civil War during the Reconstruction period, the Union was getting the band back together. We were merging back with the South. And, you know, the Union said, if you want to be part of our club, we're going to have to join the United States. OK, so we're going to become U.S. citizens. The 14th Amendment will be passed and ratified. 41% of the states said, no, we're Americans. We were a union of states collectively. We traded with each other freely and we formed the federal government just to take care of 17 essential services, mainly our self-defense from enemies, foreign and domestic, post office, postal roads, treasury, etc. They were forced into it. 41% fought it. They fought it. Finally, New Jersey and Ohio were the last two states standing that said hard no. What did they do to those state legislators? They replaced all of them. So the Crown was very much facilitating this because they were trying to get us back in the War of 1812, right? The Civil War then started about the debt accruing from the Revolutionary and the Civil and the 1812 War. That's what that was about. So the Crown offensively got us to get together under a U.S. moniker of being, you know, U.S. citizens with the privileges of voting. Okay, it was another like double speak. We were electing people before 1868. We were electing our public servants as Americans. Now we're voting as U.S. citizens. Well, 3 years later in 1871, the Organic Act of 1871 incorporated that 10 square miles, called it the USDC, United States District of Columbia. That was the corporation. It's gotten the name United States, USA. It's had a lot of different names. But that corporation was then, you pair that with the Bar Association, which also stood up in 1871. You now see that sick partnership between the corporation and the bar, the attorneys, right? And of course, the original 13th Amendment was modified in 1865 to go from saying that no titles of nobility shall serve in Congress or public service to freeing the slaves and involuntary servitude. So they've really done us such a major disservice. They have obfuscated the truth of all of this in our history books. But we need to know who we are in order for us to know where we're going. And we don't really know who we are because everything we know today is a lie. Mm-hmm. Our history is a lie, yep. Mike. We've got to correct the history so that we can move forward. And once you understand who we really are, you know that the North American Declaration of homogenizing all three countries from Canada to Mexico and the United States is not what being a nation is about. There's a reason God made us all in different colors and put us on different continents and speaking different dialects. It's because he wants us in his image, but to be beautiful with culture. Who wants to go to France and speak English and eat French fries in McDonald's? Well, I don't.
American tourists do.
Well, and look at the size of the American tourists with the food poisoning.
Yeah, no kidding. But by the way, on the point that you're mentioning here, you're exactly right. And the European Union as an experiment has failed.
Absolutely.
And Western Europe is done.
They're done.
As a civilization, by the way. I mean, the United Kingdom, so-called United Kingdom, everybody wants out.
Yeah.
And their military is a joke now to the point where they can't even fight 1 week of Russia. I mean, and this is from their own military experts saying this. We can't fight 1 week.
You know, Tara Reid, the Biden whistleblower, I was talking with Kyle Serafin's producer the other day. She was in the green room ready to go on. And he said, Ann, you're not going to believe this. I'm talking to Tara Reid. She sought asylum over in Russia. And she's saying how the middle class over there is wealthy beyond imagine, and everybody is happy, skinny, beautiful, and successful. He's like, it's like looking at America 1950, basically, is what she's saying. And today, well, what are we? Americans have become what Russia was in 1970 during the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah.
We're out of control. We are a bunch of freak transhumanists that, you know, posting CRT in the classroom, and we're pushing, you know, trans behavior, and you're a toaster and you're not really a girl. You're a cis, whatever that is. I mean, it's just so the mind screw that they're doing to our youth and have been for so long has put us where we are today.
It's completely insane. Are you familiar with the Duran channel, Alex Christofaru?
No.
He lives in Greece, but he's an American, and he was recently in Moscow.
Okay.
And he was filming. He was doing a walk and talk kind of filming. And it was incredible how clean Moscow. Well, I mean, talk about a clean city. And I made a comment, and then some of the people that listen to me who have been to Russia recently, they say, oh, yeah, Russia is modern, advanced. The cities are gleaming. They're clean. They're beautiful. America's cities look like they've been a bombed out third world nation
right
at this point.
That's right.
And yet the American people are told that America is advanced and Russia is collapsing.
No.
It's exactly the opposite.
That's exactly
America right. is in a state of accelerating collapse. What do you think the next big trigger point is going to be where the cities just become unlivable?
Well, food. Once the food is done, it's done. And again, we're learning that tuberculosis, multi-drug resistant strains of tuberculosis are coming in with the migrant population. That tuberculosis can jump from human to animal and animal to human. So we already are seeing migrants deliver TB into the cattle industry in Texas right here.
That's right.
Texas unfortunately, you guys are at the risk of losing your TB-free status for your cattle industry here. And if that happens, that's going to be a massive impact. It's about an $18 billion a year economy in terms of Texas cattle. So that'll be huge if you guys lose that. But it's also being fed into, thanks to Governor Abbott, the WEF candidate that he is, busing these migrants all over the country. It sounds good on paper. Oh, yeah, you take them in Chicago, you take them in Boston. But guess what? They're also going to Des Moines, Iowa, where there's dairy industry up there, and they're right. giving TB to the dairy cattle. My beef supplier at Lights Out told me that at Lights Out Beef, they said, Ann, expect a 30% increase in the price of beef come October. Why? Because tens of thousands of cattle are being slaughtered right now because they have TB. And as soon as that happens, you've got to get rid of the cattle. And it's not just the TB. It's dengue virus. It's typhus. We've got so much happening in terms of this fifth generation war of everything being attacking us at once. Americans don't know where to turn. But again, the turning point, the breaking point is the banking collapse. And I predict that's going to be somewhere around the time they start to lock us down again, because they don't want us going to empty the banks out. You know, they don't want that
right.
panic and pandemonium.
Exactly.
They're going to have to control the masses. So lock us down with another masking episode. As Alex broke today, we're going to see that in October. I think the banking collapse is right around the corner.
I am scrambling with my company here because, you know, we have to have millions of dollars of cash flow in and out in order to buy the raw materials and manufacture the food and ship the food and everything. And we can't function without liquidity in the banks.
Right.
And yet I know a day is coming when we lose everything that's exposed that way.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you run a business while minimizing cash in the banks and yet still, you know, serving your customers and doing what needs to be done to get food into the hands of people? It's a life-saving measure at this point.
It is. But again, you know, you may be able to, let's say you figure out a way to survive that. You have another alternative parallel economy to survive that cash liquidity process. What about all of the suppliers, the transportation suppliers that move your goods around? They don't have that set up. So it doesn't matter. You may have a warehouse full of stuff that you can keep bringing in. How are you going to get it out? This is a complete collapse of our economy. People don't understand what's coming. They think an EMP is going to be the be all end all. It's going to end all the power. They don't even need to kill the power grid. They can completely kneecap us with transportation.
That's
and
right.
that stops all goods and services. And having spent time with truckers and doing the People's Convoy last year for 3 weeks embedded, they're great people. They're great Americans. They understand what's at risk. And frankly, they're disappointed in Americans because they made a big show, a lot of them at their own time and dime, to do that big trip and get everybody, you know, amped up and educated. But what have we done about it? We haven't done anything.
Yeah.
And Congress has done zero, just like they've done zero with the information from Tara Rodas.
Okay, last question, Ann, for today. But I just want to remind people to check out your website, rightnow.news. That's your show right now with Ann Vandersteel on Brighttown TV. Do you think it's too late to save America as we know it? Or are we just going to have to go through this collapse and then try to rebuild in the American spirit? Or can we turn this around still?
You know, I'm an optimist. I really am. But I'm also a parent of three children. And how many times have I told my kids when they were little, you know, don't do this or don't do that. You don't want to touch that stove. Every one of them got burned. And America is at that burning stove moment. They're going to get burned. And if they're not prepared, if they haven't been listening to you and getting their food preparations, if they haven't been stockpiling gold and silver and having cash available, they're going to get burned. But it doesn't matter if you still have those things. You're going to get burned because your friends and family won't be prepared.
That's right.
So it's going to hurt everybody. There's no way around it. It's just going to get ugly. But, you know, it depends. If America can have the will to start doing what I think is necessary, which is, I say, tactical civics. I think what they're doing, talking about, you know, getting these chapters in every county, 705 already. I think if you consider tacticalcivics.com as a way to organize and set up grand juries and just take matters into our own hands and say, we're not going to listen to you. I said this numerous times. You know, I wish that in Arizona, we'd had a better outcome, obviously. But unfortunately, Carrie Lake didn't stand up and say, I'm the governor. She should have just taken it. She should have just taken the governorship and said, I am the governor. That lady over there, she's de facto, she's fake. We're not going to pay attention to what Katie Hobbs or anybody else over there says. I'm here. Who's with me? I guarantee you 90% of Arizona would have been with Carrie Lake.
You make a really great point. At some point, you just have to assert the people's
will.
Rightful power,
yep,
politically,
right,
because you actually did win the election. And if we sit around waiting for the corrupt criminal establishment to ever recognize our election victories, that's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. We have to assert what we know is rightfully ours. It's enumerated. Our powers are enumerated very clearly in the Constitution. We have the right. It's written in plain English. There's no legalese in that document, by the way. You can read it very simply. So Americans need to assert their constitutional rights. We need to stand up. Read your state constitution. In there, it will tell you that whenever that we decide we don't want who's representing us out, we can take them out. It doesn't say every 2 or 4 years. It says whenever. And that's in every single state constitution.
But just to be clear, when you say we can take them out, you mean at the election, at the ballot box.
Oh, we can remove them from office, not violently.
You're not talking about violence. Yeah,
No. I would never, I'm not advocating any violence. A revolution to me can be peacefully done.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about through legal means, through...
Right. Lawful.
Through the people's due process.
Right.
And... You know, the people can self-assemble their own sheriff.
Yes.
Their own sheriff's deputies, essentially their own law enforcement at the county level.
That's right.
That's actually part of how the Constitution is composed.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, Ann, you have a lot of great information. You're doing amazing work for America. I know you're very busy, and we really appreciate you stopping by and sharing this intel with us. And I know you have a lot more in your show. And you're also hosting Alex Jones next week.
Yep. Michael Yon and I next week. And you'll be on with us. You've already committed.
Oh, okay. is it Wednesday or Thursday? Or we're not sure yet.
We're not sure yet. Michael Yon will be getting that, but we'll let you know.
Okay. All right. So that's it, folks. Then Ann Vandersteel and she and Michael Yon will be hosting Infowars.com. I think the entire show, all 4 hours, coming up next week. And feel free to share this interview, of course, this video file. You can repost it on other platforms. And thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams with Ann Vandersteel in studio here near Austin, Texas. Take care, everybody, and thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
So, Michael, I know the Satellite Phone Store, which has been our sponsor for quite some time, they've provided you quite a bit of gear, SAT123.com, for those who want to go visit the website. Can you tell us about how you're using that gear in your travels and you know, in your journalism efforts and your war correspondent efforts?
Oh, yeah. The satellite radios at sat123.com provided were vital. As you know, I'm down in Darien a lot. That's why my Darien Gap in the jungles. That's why my Twitter handle is Michael Yon Jungle.
Yeah, right.
So, and a problem with jungles and radios is they just don't mix well together for many reasons. And so at one point last year, I had a team down there on the ground and we couldn't make comms. So I had to charter an airplane to get over the top of them to reach them. It was like, you know, PBR Street Gang, this is almighty. You know what I mean? Talking to, you know, trying to make comms through the trees, right? And,
right.
Anyway, then I contacted you about, you know, more high-tech radios that we can use that, you know, things have changed since I was in Special Forces. And so you mentioned sat123.com and they provided 5 satellite radios that are really awesome. And so now so that people understand how this works, it's a walkie-talkie, not a sat phone, but it's a walkie-talkie that goes, hits the satellite.
It's a push-to-talk. It's a PTT.
And it's awesome because we're just using them I'm often on the Texas-Mexican border as well.
Yep.
And down there's a lot of places that have no cell coverage.
That's right.
And if you got regular walkie-talkies, PTTs, I mean, they're good for 2 or 3 miles or whatever. They're line of sight, but often it's hill over dale, and you need something better, and the phones are too slow, or they just don't work. So we were just using 5 radios down. We got little magnetic antennas for the roofs of the vehicles, and you can screw in the antenna when you're just walking out.
And so just so our audience knows, all you need is a clear view of the sky.
That's it. And even in the jungle, that's easy to get.
Exactly. If you're just looking straight up, you can see the sky.
Yep.
You just can't see horizontally across the jungle through the thick of it.
Yeah. It's easy to find a clear sky in the jungle because usually you're near a river. And the rivers have always a clear view of the sky.
Right.
I mean, if it's a significant river.
Good point. So what about the battery life? Are they holding battery life well?
So well that none have even come close to wearing out.
Is that right?
Every time I check it, it's still almost full.
And so,
not like we use them a lot. We're not like, you know, communicating hours on end. We're just like, hey, meet me at such and such and that sort of thing.
And then do you have all 5 on the same group, where one person says something and the other 4 hear the same thing?
Yeah, you can do them in different ways.
Yes.
And so they come in a group of 5 radios, and you go onto the website so I could talk with somebody in Tokyo with these, but you have to put a bubble around the area of that radio, right?
Right. You so we define the geographic boundary.
Exactly.
Right.
So let's say we're here, and then there's somebody in Tokyo and somebody in South Africa and somebody in Australia. We can talk in the same chat group or same voice group as long as we define where all the radios are.
Right.
And it only takes like a minute to define them.
Yeah, and you can define a pretty big area. I've defined an area of like pretty much all of Central Texas all the way up to Dallas, Fort Worth, down to San Antonio.
Right.
For my group.
And if you leave the group, just redefine it. But again, once you've done it just a few times, you can do it in 30 seconds or a minute. I mean, it's basically like it's not sending an email. You just go in there, click, 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 click. Okay, there's my boundaries.
Yeah.
Close.
You just log in.
Yeah. And it's done.
Yeah. Well, very cool. I'm really excited that you're finding a lot of practical uses for this technology because, you know, the satellite phone company they've donated a lot of gear to a lot of people, including some people who are right now doing rescue work in the Lahaina, Maui fires.
I was just wondering when that fire happened and they had no comms, if they had these radios. Yep. I know the ham radios were working because we immediately checked which ham radios were working, but that's not enough to, at least for your family, you can have some comms that work.
Right.
But keep in mind, Hawaii, where I've spent significant time, lots of mountains, right? So, I mean, a regular PTT, regular walkie-talkies, you know, line of sight.
Right. I mean, every island is a giant mountain.
Basically.
And so you can't talk to the other side of the island on a regular radio.
Yep.
You got to have the sat radio to work.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just go on their website and look.
All right. Very cool. Well, thanks for sharing that real world experience with the gear. And for those of you who want to check this out for yourself, go to SAT123.com. And they've got both the satellite radios and also the Bivy sticks, which is the 2-way satellite text messaging devices that are even more affordable, by the way. So if you're, if you have to leave because your town has been burned out by a terrorist government, then you can actually text your family members and tell them you're okay. And you can even give them your location, GPS, everything, you know, for a rescue attempt. For
I've not used the Bivy stick, but I've heard quite a few people say they're awesome.
I mean, I've got one in my car right now. I can show it.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah. They're super useful. Mm-hmm. And, my buddies that work the border, the Texas border, as part of the interdicting human trafficking, and I think you know some of the guys, they run those Bivy sticks all the time. And they turn on the location tracking on purpose so that one small team, like 2 or 3 guys, can monitor the location of another team that's actually interdicting a group of human traffickers to make sure that they're okay. If something happens to that team, you've got GPS coordinates and you can call in assistance via GPS.
Right.
Right. So they're very useful and you just clip them onto your gear. You know, they're super lightweight and the batteries last days. So they're really great.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to getting back down on the border. And again, sometimes the only way we communicate is with devices like this.
Yep.
Actually, I need to put one of these radios in your location so when I'm down in the jungles, I can actually reach you.
Yeah, well, I've already got some radios. I could just join your group, I think.
Oh, we'll do that.
Yeah, we could just combine our teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Wonder Twin powers. Activate.
Wonder Twin.
All right. Well, thanks for watching, everybody. Mike Adams here with Michael Yan at the Brighteon Studios in Central Texas.